Hey, this is Anders, and you're listening to TCR.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports podcast. Episode 80 coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. The date, November 1st, 2017. The time, 6:21 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'll be one of your hosts for this evening. My name is Tim. Hello. How are you? Joining me are my two best buds, my fire team. Anuj. Hello, Anuj.
Hey, bud. How you doing? I like what you did there.
Oh, I'm keeping it topical,
fire.
You know?
That was good.
Keeping it
good.
Topical. And then we have Brett. Hello, Brett.
Hello, friends.
And then we also have Moisty, who just joined the Discord, but I'm going to have to kick you, Moisty. I love you. You want to say hi?
You
want to say hi to the podcast?
Hi, podcast. Bye.
So loud, Moisty. Bye. That's what happens. That's live recording, folks. Oh, what else do we have? This is really going to be the best episode ever. Not because Branderson just made an appearance on the show. But that's also a good introduction that we do have a Discord. And look at that. We're on it. People are on it. You just heard it. Go to our website, tcr.gg, and to our Twitter, at The Center Ring. And, you know...
Hell, if
follow.
You get on during the recording, we'll let you say hi.
Yeah, if we happen to do that. With that being said, let's move us down to the proper channel in our Discord here, to where we won't be interrupted again. There we go. Well, what else do we have on the show, gentlemen? Actually, we're going to end the show with some e-news. Got a lot of e-news to get to. A lot of things starting this week that we want to at least touch on. Epicenter just ended for Counter-Strike GO. Frustrating. I'm frustrated about Epicenter. I got to get it off my chest. I don't know if it's warranted. I'm not salty. I'm just frustrated. So we'll talk about some Epicenter there. But to start the show off, I actually want to piggyback off of another way more successful podcast than us. And that's the H3H3 podcast. So recently... H3H3, for those who don't know, they're on YouTube, very popular. I'm sure you know who they are. Go check them out if you don't. They're great. But they also do a podcast, and they always have like a rotating door of guests. Well, last Friday they had Dr. Disrespect on. Dr. Disrespect,
my
again
man.
If you don't know who he is, he's a two-time champion back to back, and he's a great Twitch streamer, a lot of insight. He is, or was, the one of the lead developer for map design for Sledgehammer Games, which famously did Modern Warfare 2. Do you know which one it is?
Yeah,
was it 2?
Yeah, Modern Warfare. Yeah. I've heard him talk about it on stream.
Okay. Yeah.
He's made some of the best maps, like been involved with some of the best maps
that
have been.
So he's not just a goofy Twitch streamer. He actually has some credibility in the scene. So he was on the H3 and H3 podcast, and they asked him the question, basically, what does he feel about PUBG and more so just Battle Royale games in general. I want to play this quick. It's about a minute 40, almost maybe 2 minutes. But then I want to use that as a launching point for the discussion. With IEM Oakland coming up, that's going to be one of the first real tournaments for PUBG. And maybe kind of use that as a launching point to discuss it. So here is Dr. Disrespect with H3H3 talking some PUBG. Oh, let me turn that up.
Since that it has a certain level of... depth to the gameplay, with scopes and leading and bullet lead and all that stuff, right? But there's still the element, like, and I talk about it too, and this is up for debate, is it's still randomized loot. Like, if I land at this house, I don't know what's going to be in the house.
Right. That is super annoying about the game. It's like sometimes you can just search a whole village.
Yeah.
And you...
Yeah.
Nada.
I think there should be... I think if Battlegrounds wants to take it to the level that they want to take it at... Even from a commentating standpoint, like commentators, the problem I think with Battle Royale games is that the game starts off, everyone's flying in, right? And when they fly in, they land. As a commentator, what's the story that you're trying to tell? Well, the only story that you're really trying to tell is, okay, that's TSM, and they're on the south end. They're going to look at looting the military base. We'll see what comes of that. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, but
slow. It's, slow start.
It's slow start, and there's not much of a narrative to it.
Right.
But if you were to take a look at the fact that, like, hey, let's if there was set loot in this map, and everyone's landing down, and you see two teams going to an area, as a commentator, you have knowledge like, hey, there's where the car, the sniper is, and there's a level 3 helmet there. You can actually spectate right. that and figure out which team gets that, acquires
and there's
that
strategy in getting there.
Yes. And but, there's a narrative to talk about.
Sure. So I think it seemed like they just need a completely different mode of playing to make mm-hmm. it an actual high-level competitive game.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should. I mean, that seems like within reason.
They should at least try it out.
Yeah, they should
try it out. See how it's received.
So there again, Doctor's disrespect with H3H3 talking about specifically PUBG, but in general, the Battle Royale type of games, and even more broad spectrum, just RNG in general, right? Like, does RNG even right. have a place in competitive gaming?
Yeah.
I want to use. Let's start with that. Let's start with RNG
right.
in esports or competitive okay. gaming, and then we'll morph into PUBG because I think we'll have more opinions on that.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants to see their favorite players and their favorite team just in any Battle Royale game die instantly with nothing, you know, like not even a way to defend themselves, you know, just bad RNG there. And also, I'll take it beyond just weapons in any Battle Royale game. The RNG in the circle, too. I mean, there's not only RNG in gear, but there's RNG in the end game. And it just sucks. They need to figure out a way to cut out as much RNG as possible because there's still going to be a little bit. But, I mean, there's ways, like he said, to kind of limit it and try something new if you want to be legitimate.
Yeah, I think RNG doesn't have, like, much of a place in sports because it limits how skilled one can be at the game, right? Like, if you don't know what's going to happen, you can easily just have a bad round. And, like, to Brett's point, like the circle in these games or whatever is enclosing you, like maybe limit it to like 4 spots that it could spawn, right? Versus having 50 different places and it's always just a crapshoot. You're on one side and it spawns on the bottom left, you're in the top right. Like that makes it very difficult to strategize a game. And so I think if you had like 4 set points, then you can strategically pick, to his point, like where you want to go and get your loot and move on. Having randomized weapons, it's the worst. Like it's just so hard to right. it's fun as a player, right? For us, we can enjoy it, can still be frustrating. But like from a competitive standpoint, if I'm watching, the last thing I want to see is a dude that has a level 3 helm, you know, fully decked out car and an M4. And this one guy's like searched 40 homes and he's come out with a revolver and a level 1 vest, you know, like it's
yeah,
just
if you. Yeah, and if you want to bring it to just like regular sports, right? Like you're watching the World Series, someone hits a ball up in the air, right? Something that would have been normally a fly ball just on a normal night. Maybe there's a gust to when it blows out, but we're not going to go back and say, well, if it wasn't for that wind, you know, find a way to just eliminate that conversation of, you know, TSM only lost because Brake couldn't find a weapon. In 20 houses, like you said.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want that to be the end game. We don't want that to be the narrative.
I was about to say, it's not the fact that there's RNG. It's, you don't want it to be the narrative. You don't want it to be the deciding factor. Listen, I'm a realist, right? There's going to be RNG in games. Look at Hearthstone. Hearthstone is not only a very competitive game or a very successful game, but even in the esports scene, it does have its competitive scene. That whole game is based off of RNG. It's a card game. Every card game is RNG. With going back to PUBG to kind of blend in the discussion, I don't think you're ever going to see the fact that you're never going to see preset spawns because I just don't think that's the style of the game. And now if you're going back to Dr. Disrespect's point of, well, just maybe try it out, right? Even if it's just for a tournament or something, right? For the competitive sake of it, maybe have set ones. But one thing that they do right to kind of combat the, hey, you just got unlucky and you didn't find anything that game, is they do the multiple games with the point system. And even that's not perfect, right? Because we discussed
it. But it's still a crapshoot, right?
It is. It is.
To like, how many times have we been to Pachinki, for example? That's a town in PUBG. But like, how many times have we been there and like we come out with everything or we come out with nothing? And it could be multiple games in a row where it's like, this town sucks. Let's go to someplace else, you know?
Right. No, I'm not disagreeing with that.
Is there another game that we could think of that has that kind of RNG in competitive esports?
Well, I mean,
besides, like you said, card games, like,
or Battle Royale? Because, I mean, you can look at H1Z1, and one of their fixes for it is that when H1Z1 first came out, it was a little bit more like PUBG, where it was scarce to find guns, and now you play H1Z1, and it's like every home has... They're everywhere. They were like, fine, we're just going to oversaturate it so that way everyone has the same gun and the rest is up to your skill and strategy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about outside of the
Battle Royale and card game.
Yeah, outside of Battle Royales. And card games, let's put it kind of in its own.
It's like, difficult to see.
All like that, right?
Yeah, it's difficult to think of any off the top of my head because even like take a game like Counter-Strike, for example, right? Every gun has a spray pattern, and that spray pattern is the same, and that's part of the skill curve, is learning the spray pattern. Do you guys remember, I think it maybe was, man, it might have been like 2 years ago, where for like a day, they implemented random spray patterns. It was like in a patch where they did random spray patterns. Do you remember this, Anuj?
No, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I'm not going to lie. It was right when they added the R8 revolver.
First shot accuracy, are you talking about?
No, I'm just talking about, it was like most guns just had more of a random spray pattern. Seriously in the game for a night. And then Valorant
triggered me enough to where I was out for a week.
Right, but it was seriously for like a night where Valve was like, ooh, okay, this was a mistake. And then they reversed that patch. So, I mean, it just doesn't work in the FPS zone. I'm sure MOBAs... But, you know, some of that has a little RNG with even your stats, but not as much.
Like, and maybe in terms of stats, but not in terms of like gear or how, like what spawns where on the map, right?
Right. I mean, like for example, like MOBA, you might have something where it's, you know, oh, your crit is 30% chance, right? So you have that percentage built in, which is RNG, right? 30% is the same as saying you have RNG. It's all the same, but it's not solely based off the skill, right? Everyone has that kind of thing on Dota or any type of MOBA or, you know, competitive RPG, I guess, if you will, or stat-based game. It's different with PUBG.
They're creating their own genre, right? Like, this Battlegrounds is becoming more and more popular. Like you said, you've already mentioned H1Z1, you know, Fortnite. Obviously, you have PUBG. Like, maybe they're creating their own little space in esports that would work, but I think there's things they can do to obviously increase, like, the level of viewership is going to be huge early on. It's going to be like new and fresh, right? But over time you're going to see a frustration level, and that can hurt your game. So they have time to be able to correct it, and I think it's probably right going into IEM Oakland the way that it is, because that's what's made your game popular. But when you see the esports scene, if you see it kind of tilting one way, then you kind of know, like, hey, we should probably make some changes. And they still have time. I mean, the game is not a full release. Yeah. But, yeah, we don't think it's perfect the way it is.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, just one quick thought. I mean, there are quick and easy ways to fix the game. I mean, how would you guys feel about maybe spawning in with a pistol? Just something that you could have an initial firefight with and, you know, see some, you know, be able to see some action, like be able to, there's a firefight there. And if you want that loot that's in, you know, military, you have something to defend yourself with.
So this is the only reason I think I would be okay with that route. Like if you just gave someone a pistol, if you found that games were going too long, I don't think giving someone a pistol would help fight RNG, because let's face it. If there's two buildings at the start, I go into one building, you go into the other, we both have pistols, but all of a sudden in your building, you just picked up an M4, and I found a smoke grenade. You're still going to dominate me. Like, there's no way I'm getting out of that scenario. The only
my
way
AK is going to beat your pistol.
Right. No matter what, yeah. The pistol at the start would help if you, like, let's say IEM Oakland happens. And keep in mind, most of these tournaments so far for PUBG have either been, what, a charity or kind of like a test run. When you have big money on the line, and this is me personally, if it's $100,000 and it's based off of if I have to survive 10 more, you know, deaths, I'm going to sit my ass in a closet for the next 20 minutes while everyone else kills each other. Yes, so I will move for the next 30 minutes if it means I'm going to make $10,000 more. So the only way the pistol, and that would extend the game, which we've all seen with the World Series, shorter games are better, right? No one liked the 5.5-hour baseball game. And if PUBG all of a sudden turns into a marathon to watch, then I could see where adding a pistol at the start would help intensify the start of the game.
Let me tell you another issue with my thoughts on the pistol at the start. So picture you're dropping into a big town where there's different elevations, right? Whether that be buildings, sides of cliffs, whatever it may be. You're still going to have people go to mass areas, right? Because most of the loot's still going to be in the bigger town. So then the whole strategy of the game, in my mind, would turn into something like, oh gosh, let's all land our team on the highest point and then just start shooting at people that are still on parachutes coming down. Because people land at all different times in these games. I mean, we've seen people land 10, 15, 20 seconds before somebody else. And in some cases, if somebody's doing a longer run, more. So that would be an issue of like figuring out how to start the game off then without losing 40 people at the beginning and then everybody just hiding real quick.
Yeah.
It's, I think the only, like they said, they could either do this and it would definitely help with the narrative of if you have set spawns in areas. So that way everyone knew like, oh man, these two teams are rushing to the school and everyone knows, you know, tier 3 armor and M4 spawns there. Right? Like every time it spawns there. And maybe you could even do that, right? Like the school is huge. What if you just have it to where for sure a tier 3 helmet and vest spawns somewhere in the school? And then that way you still have the narrative of, okay, teams, if you want to risk it, go to the school and get the tier 3 stuff. But it's random on where it's going to be at within the school. So you still have that suspense and drama of like who's like, going to find it first while fighting each other.
But there's still RNG.
You're not going to get rid of RNG. That's one of the appeals to this game is people finding the loot and then fighting with it.
And even like you said to your point, like I think they would probably do that anyway, right? Because even if you spawn like, hey, this house is going to have an AK and M4 in it with loot, I don't think they would naturally spawn it in the same spot in the house every single time either. You know, like it could be in the upstairs bedroom, downstairs.
Right. Well, and that's why it all depends on how far you want to get rid of RNG.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you said, these games are built around it. It has to be its own way of being done. It's just there's going to be more of a middle ground than where there is now.
You have to find the balance between RNG, but then also keeping it competitive for competitive scene, right? The only other thing, and I don't really like it because it's how H1Z1 did it, is, okay, it's still going to be RNG on where things spawn. And even in PUBG, everyone knows, right? There's heat maps where you can look up and Google, like, what areas of the map are typically where you're going to find the better spawns. But if you just put more guns out there, and then that way, it's like, okay, well, people can go here and there, but you're probably going to at least find competitive guns to fight against. But I don't know if I really like that idea as much, because then it's just everyone running in opposite directions because they know where no matter where they go, they're going to get an AK. So I don't know. If you want my honest opinion, and they brought it up here, and I actually have an audio clip here of them talking about it, and we can kind of use this as a segue to play this second clip from Dr. Disrespect talking to H3H3, is the map. If once PUBG starts adding more maps, I think it will help if you have kind of soft RNG built in where, you know, and I'm going to call soft RNG where you know something's going to spawn there, you just don't know exactly where. Because if all of a sudden you can have a map rotation or random map selection out of maybe three or four maps, and if the maps are good design, then I think that can that will help at least spice it up a little bit.
For sure. I think another map could be huge. I think like they've already obviously announced their second map, which is that desert map, PUBG.
Yeah, they announced that forever ago.
Like, see, H1, you know, I'll tell you what I didn't – this bothered me on H1 is when they went to the new map, they, like, took the old one out of play. Yeah. And, like, I really enjoyed that old map. Like, I liked it a lot. The elevations had the crazy mountains on there. And there were so many like fun fighting spots, and they created the new map and like
unless the map's broken, and this goes for any game, unless it's broken, why take it away?
Yeah,
I feel like developers are guilty of this all the time. Like, especially like when you transition to new games, right? Like, look at Destiny 2. Destiny 2 is an amazing game. I am loving it, by the way. But there are certain things where it's like, okay, well, this was in Destiny 1. Why did you take it away? It's just. That's a different rant in general, but...
Well, look at Counter-Strike. The biggest rant in Counter-Strike is that they just continue to fix old maps instead of making new maps and building up the map pool and making it fun for, you know, viewers as well as players. I think having just new maps in general is what the game needs instead of revamping the same old map and then spitting out the same product. And it's like, okay, that, I mean, it looks pretty. I feel like you could have been doing that anyway while creating a new map.
Yeah, and let me do this then. Let me play the second clip from Dr. Disrespect because it's exactly talking about map design.
And, I mean, we haven't even talked about level design. That's a whole
new
world.
Like, yeah, that's your expertise, right?
Yeah, there's, like, systems, right? There's systems, there's player mechanics, and then there's, like, the actual level design aspect of a lot of games, right?
Do you think that level design is kind of, like, unappreciated
I think so.
Of competitive?
I think level design... it seemed like it was valued a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw great, I mean, Counter-Strike levels to this day are
same
still
shit.
Same, but they're still like the best, right? Because they're so well balanced. And you look at old Halo maps, you know, like Halo 2 maps and it, you know, and they're there's a reason why those old ones are starting to still be recreated even with all the new Halos coming out or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just think I don't know why. But it seems like with the older maps, it seems like everything now is catering to the wrong reasons. Pacing of the game, being able to like right out of spawn, you're able to engage combat a lot quicker. So it's catering to a wider spectrum of people rather than like the, you know, trying to introduce that skill gap.
And again, I really can't disagree with anything that he said. I think
the dude is so sharp, man. Like, just hearing him talk. Like
I wish I had those pipes.
Exactly what right? Yeah.
For someone who actually has his own radio show, believe it or not, I'm on the radio, and this is my voice. I don't have, like, a broadcaster voice. This is it. This is what God gave me.
This is what you're working with.
Yeah, this is, listen, I got to play with the cards I'm dealt. But no, when Dr. Disrespect gets out of character, that I could listen to him for days, just breaking down. I was so like I was blown away when I was listening to the podcast live. I was like, "Damn! Like this dude knows what he's talking about when it comes to, I guess his opinions, but his outlook on the competitive scene." And I don't disagree with him on the map design. There's a reason people constantly play older maps from older games, and it's not nostalgia's sake. Because look at all these people who are in Counter-Strike playing it for the first time. You can ask someone who is brand new, like who just picked up Counter-Strike for CSGO, and they will still tell you to this day, Dust 2 is one of the best maps in the game. And they have no former memories of it from youth. They just, because the map is good. And looking back for Halo 2, like, think of like Midship or Beaver Creek or Battle Creek, whichever one you want to call it, if it's Halo 1 or 2. I mean, you have those classic maps that were designed
to his point, right? That's like to his point. It's like the new group of developers and creators and content creators, they are catering to a much wider audience. Like gaming is so broad and it's gone to touch so many different people, competitive and non-competitive, that they try to play that middle line rather than drives what I feel makes the money, which is a lot of games getting into esports now.
Well, and I'll bring it up even to this, and this is taking it away from level design, but it's just it's staying on topic of the catering to a different audience. Back in the day, there used to be something in video games, boys and girls, called map control. Map control was the name of the game. If you wanted to compete in Halo or Call of Duty or any FPS that really had any type of respawn to it, you had to control the map. And by doing so, you could basically control where the other team was going to respawn. You would spawn lock them into maybe like a half of the map, and then none of your guys would push. If you push to the other side, the game would trigger that, and they would spawn elsewhere. Well, I believe it started with maybe Call of Duty Black Ops, maybe even Modern Warfare 2. But they got rid of the set spawn areas and map control and added a random spawns. And that completely altered the way people played competitive games, because you eliminated the map control. You eliminated what could have been a strategic advantage or that narrative in games where it was like, man, you know, taking it back to Halo 2, where Final Boss was controlling Straight Ripping, when is Straight Ripping going to be able to break this kind of cycle of constantly getting spawn locked, and you would wait for that big play? And you could do that even with friends in matchmaking. You could spawn lock some random poor scrub and dominate them. But I think when you're looking at the general consensus, people complained about it, and that's why they got rid of it.
Yeah, because who doesn't like getting shot in the back, right? Constantly. Just by somebody random coming from a weird direction that you wouldn't expect.
Maybe this right here is what's caused that raging generation that we're in now. Like, this could be, we just might have found the root cause what created, like, trolls and like just internet haters. Like, oh my gosh,
I don't know, Anoush. What was Tim like pre Modern Warfare 2? What was he like?
Good job.
I was happy. Well, but to talk seriously about your joking point, it does have some sense to where when you're playing with friends and you know you're better than someone, but then a random spawn puts them behind your team, and then they just blow up your team or anything like that. Like, that doesn't sit well with the competitive scene. You know, there's a reason, like with Counter-Strike, they figured out the formula early on and for the most part haven't changed anything. Like, even when they add new maps, they try to trick it up with canals and it's an awful map. They tried to trick it up. They went away from their simple map design and try to get fancy with it, and it just doesn't work. Why, I don't know. But it just, there's... And I think that's one of the issues with even new games trying to break that competitive, that ceiling, is they try to trick it up too much. I mean, look at Halo. And I'm constantly going back to there because it was a very popular game. And their map design was on point. Well, or even Call of Duty. When you add like jump packs and being able to climb up walls, you're adding an entire another second or third layer onto maps. And it's making them way too big, way too complicated for just anyone to just pick up the game and play and or watch for that matter. And that's bringing it to Overwatch. You know, I mean, it's just sometimes it can get too complicated.
So let's take it back to canals, and maybe there it goes back to RNG, right? Because on canals, there's like how many different angles somebody can come from to get to you at a certain bomb site. Maybe it's an RNG. It's an RNG factor. Like, where are they going to come from? We don't know. But on maps like Dust 2, there's a couple of directions on A site that they can come from, or on B site rather. You know, it's. You know where they're going to come from. There's two directions.
And you have a fighting chance to do that.
Contact points, right? Yeah. They create contact areas where these are like engagement zones. You know this is where the fight's going to take place. So as a viewer, you know kind of when to keep your eye on something. That's what makes spectating so great in those games, right? Because they can see something about to happen, right? They know where the engagement's going to take place. It eliminates that RNG completely. If they're going to do an A push, you're going to have like three guys setting up for a smoke and they can call the game more like a play-by-play style rather than waiting for something to happen and be more reactionary in your commentating. And from a viewership standpoint, you know, it's kind of the, oh crap, that just happened versus, you know, you really understanding this is exactly what's going on and where it's all going to take place.
It's an interesting topic and discussion, and I don't know what it could ever be solved, because no matter what, you're going to get AAA developers developing games for the masses. You're going to get everyone who calls themselves the next big esports, and it's never going to work because everyone tries to trick it up too much. So I don't know. I really don't know what the direction. I can't wait to see the direction of gaming going forward. You know, like when it comes to competitive game, you're going to have to find like that perfect balance between simplicity, but then making your game fun enough to where it's simple, but it's not boring. Does that make sense?
Like, I think, sure.
I mean, look at Counter-Strike, right? That's why we can sink so many hours into it, because it's not complicated. You don't really have to think that hard while playing it. But at the same
time, for easy enough to like, thinking hard is like, depending on the level you want to play at, right? Yeah, like that's, you know, if you're playing with Silver 1, yeah, probably not a lot of thinking going on in those kinds
of
games.
But you can climb the skill gap, right? You can see the curve, like and you can figure out what you need to do to get it.
Exactly. And then Counter-Strike's just unique in that sense, though. I mean, you don't see too many games, if any, that have withheld the test of time map creation-wise and simplicity as far as complexity within the game, right? From the thought process, you look at the coaches and what they go through, you know, how much thought's behind it, but how simple the concept is as a whole.
And
it's
yet,
just going to take a creator that wants to do it, right? Like somebody just wants that, you know, that should be the intention of the game going into it. Battalion 44 has mentioned themselves as that type of game. I think that's one to maybe keep an eye on.
And that's that new World War II.
Yeah, it's another World War II, and it's you know, kind of odd that it's releasing similar time to, you know, COD World War II. But I believe they're in beta, so another one to keep an eye on, because they've always said their focus has been just the competitive, like, esports side of it. So it'll be nice to see what they bring to the table.
We'll have to keep an eye on that. I don't. We could probably continue talking about this the entire show, but I don't want to get too bogged down with it. But again, I just, when listening to Dr. Disrespect, it really took me back, kind of made me think of it from a different perspective. And, I don't know, I thought that was a good talk.
Made me tingle a little bit.
Yeah. We love you two time.
But you did have, speaking of Counter-Strike and all its glory, you had one of the actually bigger tournaments throughout the year. And I say bigger because it normally produces some pretty good competition, but the Epicenter 2017 just took place. It wrapped up on Sunday. I'll start from bottom to top real quick, because really the bottom half of this, from 5th to 8th, it really not much happened. I mean, Liquid and Gambit got 7th and 8th. North and FaZe tied for 5th and 6th. And then I'll use the FaZe getting 5th and 6th as a jumping point to the discussion. What is there to say about FaZe? Anuj, I'll let you start. There's too much to say, but
he's the one trolling.
I know. Yes, you're the one calling them out on Twitter. So I'll let you speak your mind.
Yeah, I mean, FaZe, again, they're awesome, right? Like, let's start off with that. They're obviously a really good team. I'm just
don't backtrack.
No, I just don't like the cockiness that's come with that team. Like listening to Nico on Twitter. Dude, it like kills me to like see him talk on Twitter, because everything just comes across as so cocky and like arrogant. And what they forget is like where Nico came from, right? He was in a situation with Mouse where he was an all-star and they weren't getting anywhere. Now they've paired him with all-stars. Kind of started off the same with FaZe, right? He was kind of the all-star again. Not a whole lot was going well for them.
They quickly built around him.
Very quickly. And when you build around somebody to add that type of talent, like you added other all-stars to your team. So I think they need to show a little bit more like grace, you know, as they kind of move forward.
A little bit more class.
Yeah, you know, they fell to 2 in the standings, which maybe that'll kind of help with that a little bit, because it's not easy to hold that one spot for a long time. So you know, ask teams like Astralis and all these guys, like, it's hard to hold that number one spot.
You already have an enemy in the CSGO team. Like, the bad guy, I think, is North, right? I think North and SK, I think, sometimes can be the bad guy. FaZe does not because want to be good, the bad guy.
But,
like,
yeah.
You are the Miami Heat right now of CSGO. And so when you lose, you just kind of have to roll with the punches. But don't get on Twitter and like you said, Anuj, have that bad attitude about it, because it's just going to rub everyone the wrong way. Like, you're as FaZe, what excuse do you have? Especially when they were eliminated by... who was it? Virtus Pro, right? Wasn't that like the team that was the last nail in the coffin?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and you know what the worst thing is, what makes this even worse? These were best out of 3 games, right? Like, that was...
This was the moment, the scenario where everyone's like, well, there's no luck in best of 3s. You know?
Yeah, you know, it's not like it was just that one map that y'all are not very good at. Like, you had an opportunity to win 2 out of the 3 maps. You're the better team. You should come through in these situations. VP is a whole nother topic. I mean, we've done shows about VP, and it's like we could write another story today.
Let me quickly go over the rest of the standings, and then we'll just kind of bounce back and forth into discussion, because you can't talk about FaZe not qualifying for the playoffs and then VP. So you had Astralis get 4th, G2 get 3rd, VP, Virtus Pro got 2nd place, and SK ended up winning it in 1st. So that being said, let's jump back to VP, because
yeah,
to add extra salt into the wound of FaZe, yes, VP played out of their minds this tournament, and they do that, right? They have the capability of shutting down the best teams in the world. That being said, unless they've been practicing behind closed doors against some of these teams, their normal, like, skill talent right now has been the Premier League. Like, they should not have been able to handle FaZe the way they did, because they just aren't even used to playing that type of caliber. Like, I think FaZe, maybe they surprised FaZe. Maybe it was FaZe thought it was going to be a lot easier than what they did.
Well, I mean, this tournament here for VP embodies their entire existence right now. Like, you look at the final standings, they had a minus 16 round differential, minus 16 at the end. And, you know, that game against FaZe, the first map in Noosh, right? They lost, like, I think they won like 2 rounds that entire map. And
yeah,
then they come back and win the next 2. It's like, be consistent. Like, that's their problem. They're consistent only when it matters. And
but isn't that what matters too at the same time? Like, if they keep getting invites to these, if they keep getting invites, which they're going to continue getting invites, let's be real, they're not going anywhere, right? And they hold that major spot. That's the most important part, is they hold that major legend spot. This team doesn't have to go anywhere.
No,
like,
they could be perfectly fine jumping back between Premier and the Pro League and ESL if in the meantime you're going to win, you know, $100,000 here and there, and maybe qualify for the next major and get more money there. I'm sure they're fine with it.
They always do just enough to be like, to keep the owners happy, but to keep them together, because for the longest time, you know, there's been that kind of rumor like, hey, when are they going to break up? But then they get 2nd place in a tournament like this against SK, where it's like, well, maybe we should keep the band together and maybe we can get this thing figured out. It's just like they always do just enough at the right time to just keep this thing
the thing that would
together.
That would drive me nuts if I was a Virtus Pro fan for their CSGO team is situations like this. And I can only imagine it's how my parents felt when I would bring home like an A on an exam, and then in between the exam or exams, I would get like C's and F's on all my homework, right? Where they were like, okay, well, we know you can do it, So why don't you do it all the time?
Like, why is it
right? Yeah, yeah, like, why are you not trying all the time? Just put your best foot forward all the time. And I'm like,
And like coming out of this tournament, coming out of this tournament, doesn't it still feel like a win for them?
Like, why, absolutely. Because no one's talking about SK winning. Everyone's talking about Virtus Pro getting second.
How nice it is to have them back, right?
Is like, it? But here's the
nice
thing:
to have them back.
Is it it's incredible? Like,
that's what people are saying.
Or are they playing possum the entire time? Right. Like, frustrates me with if I was a Virtus Pro fan, is that this proves that it's just mentality, right? It's just them not wanting to perform. Maybe. I guess the future will tell, but that's what I feel.
Part of it is they have a different person, like, kind of step up every time too, right? Like, this tournament, it was Neo. You know, previously, the last tournament, it was, like, Pasha. Then if you think back to some of their other runs, it was, like, Snacks was the all-star. Yeah. So it's, like, they find a different person to play really well in these big events, and everybody else contributing, right? As long as they're not completely off their game, all they need is one of them to be on point. I always catch myself rooting for them, though.
They're likable. Yeah, I mean, they don't have anyone that annoys you.
Part of it is they're the older gamers, right? Like, they're 30 years old. You know, that's what you got. Neo just turned 30. I mean, I believe all of them are right in that age group. So it's always fun to kind of root for them because they show there's no age limit to these games, and hey, they find a way to do it. It's crazy, man. I never have faith in them too. It's always like, nope, they're going to be out in groups. Like, there's just no way they're playing FaZe. They're playing, oh, now G2 in the semifinals. They're definitely losing to G2, right? Then it's even SK in the best of five, and it's like, no way, no chance. Even then, they take them to match point in like two separate or three separate occasions to, you know, pull it off. So they were that close to winning this whole thing.
I don't know, man. I wish I knew what to say about Virtus Pro and their ups and downs. I don't know if it's a mentality thing, if it's, you know, they say that they don't care about online. Maybe it has something to do with that, but they sure do make the storylines exciting at these tournaments. SK, though, their first showing with their new roster, Bolts is full-time,
potential,
right?
Potential resources, right?
Not confirmed.
But the players have come out and said, like Cole Zier came out and said, you know, he allows me and Fur to do what we do best. Like, I feel like the players want him, and it's going to happen, right?
Well, eventually. So they've already said that Phelps will be there for the major. So he will be playing with them at the major. So Bolts is not going to be. Yeah, it was Taco that said it. So unless he gave out misinformation, Taco confirmed, and I think somebody else confirmed as well, that
until Phelps says it.
Well, and part of it is probably working with the buyout, right? I don't think that's taken place. So that's why he wore an IMT jersey in the event.
He's still on Immortals.
He's still with Immortals. So I think it's happening, but it won't happen until after.
Fascinating. I did not know that. I really, though, it was pretty cool seeing him after the win, though. And you could tell, like, just the emotion running. Maybe, so with that being said, so he was either crying over two things. He was either crying because he won, or he's crying because he knows he's not on the team and he's got to go back to Immortals.
Yeah, he's going back.
He's like, guys, please.
Oh, please don't.
Por favor.
No, they played really well.
Or whatever.
Dude,
I don't speak Spanish.
Wrong language.
Whatever.
Move along, right?
And it's like, not...
Everyone's like the...
It's not really like his fault either, right? Like, good for him. I'm happy for Bolts if he gets out of the Immortals situation, even though I've said it before. I feel bad for the organization of Immortals because they did nothing wrong. It was just that Brazilian mentality of we're going to do what we want to do. Regardless of what the organization says or what contracts we have, we're just going to do what we want to do.
Those players' mentality. Not Brazilians as a whole, right? Like, those players... Well,
they're close-knit.
You don't think it happens with Brazilians more?
I mean, we make a bigger deal out of it. I don't think it happens more, no.
You don't think the entire reason that SK has the roster that they have is for that exact reason when they signed underneath the table and not telling Luminosity?
I've seen other teams, and you look at who was it? The first time like Olaf and them left, the way they split up. I mean, it's not like it's always pretty on both ends. I think Thiel and these guys, obviously being Brazilian, are not in the same category as them, right? So it's just a person, like they're the issue with that. FNX, obviously being the other example there, but Simple has been known to be, you know, toxic in an environment. So I don't think it's just Brazilians as a whole.
Maybe not. I mean, not just Brazilians, but maybe, I don't know.
Maybe I'm prejudiced just because I don't like SK, but I just in general, though, I'm going to say that's what I feel like happened with the Immortals.
Scenario.
That's what happened with the Immortals situation.
You get a bad rap because their gaming community is toxic. Like, we know that as online gamers. We see that. Yeah. Like, their gaming community can be, like, the casual one. Maybe it's because they're playing on our server. Who knows? Probably have their own. But, yeah, the ones we see, at least in a lot of our games, yes, you know, you could definitely say that.
Overall, though, pretty good performance by Epicenter. I was happy with it. I still don't like the stage setup. I think it's cheesy, where it kind of looks like a Battlegrounds-esque, right? They got, like, the sandbags and everything.
I like that.
Dude, it's so corny.
I liked it, too. I thought it looked really cool. Like, it was. I get what you're saying, though. Like, I've not... Yeah.
It's
it was
so
a cheesy look. It's, like, really super cheesy. But it's, like, it's cool, too. I mean, it's like, okay, they made it a bomb site.
Yeah, I get what they're doing. It's just, I feel like if I told my friends to watch this, they'd be like, all right, I see where this is going.
I get it. You're Counter-Strike.
Yeah, okay. You like video games. Cool, man. Cool.
I think the players are getting a kick out of it from like terms of it had to be kind of fun to be up there and like, I love the boots. Did you see the boots that they had? I thought those were really nice.
Oh, like it's always very high production. They always do a great job.
They did such a great job on that trophy that SK got stopped in the airport because it had bullets on it.
And like, I saw that post by Paul, and he's like, we'll get this trophy home, guys, I promise. It's like, oh, man, that sucks.
That's pretty funny.
So what's the next big tournament here coming up in Counter-Strike? I guess IEM.
IEM will be a fun one.
You have IEM coming up. You also have the iBuyPower Masters. That's coming up in November 11th, so that's just next weekend. So you have iBuyPower.
If you're looking for this weekend, you have the SLI League, the SLI Invitational, right? So that has, like, Renegades, VP, Heroic, Kailu.
Virtus Pro,
Hellraiser. Renegades. So it's got some good teams in there, okay. So... If you're looking for something to watch this weekend, you can check that out.
And then you have iBuyPower the weekend after. So, you know Cloud9's going to win that. That's their annual feel-good tournament. It's them and Liquid in the final. So, Cloud9 will win that.
I'm calling it now.
There you go, man.
Calling it now. It'll be Steel's team versus Day's team final.
They're not even in it, sir.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That'd be
How
pretty
awesome would that have been, though?
They should have, man. Because, you know, that entire tournament's an invitational. So they could have invited them. It's just kind of, wow, you want to talk about the most watched tournament, though? That would have been huge.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. The viewer count would be insane.
Boot out Luminosity and, like, Misfits or something. Or NRG.
NRG, yeah, for real, man. Where have they been?
Misfits I would actually like to see. I think the NRG and Luminosity boot them. Bring them both in.
All right. Let's get into some e-news, shall we? Starting with CSGO, since we're just on topic there, you do have the American Miner that starts up tomorrow. Correct me, Anuj, does this get directly, whoever wins this goes directly to the major?
Not the major qualifier.
They go to the major qualifier.
So teams like that are waiting for them in the next stage are teams like your Cloud9, people that were, I mean, I can go look it up so I don't have it in front of me, but there's like teams like Cloud9 and all these guys are waiting to qualify still. They're in the major qualifiers. So you're going to have 8 teams advancing coming up through this next minor qualifier finals, which is taking
place
right now.
Which has Liquid in it, right?
Yeah, because Liquid didn't even qualify for the major last
time. So 2 teams are going to make it from the Americas. So your biggest teams to look out for, Liquid, Misfits, NRG, and CLG, basically. So two teams are going to make it out of that grouping, right? So that's pretty rough.
Right.
Then your other big names to keep an eye out for is the European minor. So like Optic is in that, Envious is in that, Godsend, Space Soldier. So quite a few big names on that side. Two of those teams will make it to the Boston Major qualifier, which will happen in Boston at the beginning of January.
All right. And then in Dota, last weekend you had ESL 1 Hamburg wrap up. That is one of, I think it was the first major of this year, or first major in the next season of Dota, if you will. You know how Dota announced that they're going to have like all these majors coming up now? So this was the first one. So this was the $1 million tournament where you had Virtus.pro beat Team Secret 2-0. Liquid, which was actually my favorite team to beat, they made it to the semifinals. They lost to Team Secret, and Newbie lost to Virtus.pro in the semis. Coming up tomorrow, one of my favorite events of the year, Smash Summit 5 starts tomorrow, and that goes on through Sunday.
It's like your Super Bowl, man.
Man, it is so fun to watch.
Yeah. I like it too, man. You've turned me on to that.
Any of those Summit events, though. So those Summit events, Anuj, remember Counter-Strike, they do it? So this is the one where it's literally in a house. And the pros,
so it's going to be the same setup.
Same setup. It's the same house. So
is it? Okay,
yeah,
awesome.
It's the same house where they just have the pros, the commentators, just basically chill in a house for the weekend, playing this big tournament. I mean, they're actually big tournaments, and they just kind of hang out. So, you know,
I really enjoyed that event. Yeah, so I would look forward to it.
And then like they have like the after nights where the Smash, their big thing is they'll play Town of Salem. So they'll like after the matches and stuff at like 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. They might be streaming still, and they'll just be playing Town of Salem or doing whatever.
And friendships will be lost.
Yeah, it's great, man. It's an awesome, awesome event. Also starting up, just in general, BlizzCon is this week, which means you also have the Overwatch World Cup, which is kind of like a preview. It's leading up into the Overwatch League, which starts in about a month.
Yeah, and it sucks that the championship game is going to be in the first round. Like,
you have
South Korea and USA.
Yeah, South Korea and USA are in the same
side. They're playing each other in the first. Yeah, it's like,
not,
that should be your championship, but it's not going to be
not
sad.
Not looking good. But you never know.
Yeah.
You know what? You know, miracles do happen. Miracles happen.
Maybe this will be another Russia-USA.
In Overwatch, or I guess still in Overwatch, but the Overwatch League now, a lot of teams were announced. I don't even know which ones we announced last week. Houston Oilers, Houston Oilers. I'm going way back,
man,
with that one. I don't know why I did that.
Do you even remember when they were doing?
No, like I'm not even old enough to remember the Houston Oilers. So that's
God.
That's weird. Past life, I guess. The Houston Outlaws, which is Optic's team there, they announced their name. Best logo thus far.
Best logo, not even close.
London Spitfire. Awesome name. Okay logo. Okay. They could have done
logo's
better.
Logo's fine. It's okay. The name is good, I think.
Yeah, the name's pretty dope.
I like it.
Philadelphia Fusion.
Sure, why not?
Whatever. It's not bad, you know.
I'm about to stop down the show.
Then, I don't remember if we mentioned this last episode, if it was even announced by the time we recorded. But
I don't think so.
New York Excelsior.
Please.
Everything about it is...
Why?
Everything about it is just awful.
Down the logo.
The name to the...
So bad.
Are we calling it a logo? Is that what we're,
yeah,
going to call it with?
It looks like a flag.
It's awful.
It looks like a very crappy flag.
Their logo is like a rectangle with blue lines on it. Please, if someone is a New York Excelsior fan, and maybe you live in New York and you understand the meaning behind the logo, send me a link. Because I don't get it. You're supposed to get hyped behind your logo, and you have a bunch of lines.
Imagine like wearing a shirt with that as like a full body logo.
Dude, that's what I'm saying. I don't get it. Like, you know, when they announced that, their marketing team was like, what the hell, dude? Like, that's what you're going to give us? We're supposed to market around this? Like, okay. I'll start looking for another job because we're about to get fired. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You know, maybe not. We still have two teams in the works, though. We're waiting for the second LA team to announce it, and Miami Orlando. They still have yet to announce their team or logo. But if, after that, which I'm assuming is going to happen here shortly because it seems like teams are rapidly doing it, we'll be all set and we'll be good to go.
Just in time, 1 month before the season starts.
Cut it close. And in other sad esports news, Slingshot Esports is officially shutting down as of yesterday. Thoughts? Prayers?
Yeah, wish them all the best, obviously. I guess, I mean, I didn't really go to their site or use their site a whole lot, but I mean, I've heard good things about it, so.
I used them for CSGO. Yeah. That's where Decay made his name, obviously. If anyone who follows the CSGO scene, you know, per sources, Decay worked there. And I'm sure they will bounce back, you know? As a homegrown podcast, I feel for the homegrown website shutting down and whatever, man.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job for themselves. Yeah, they were big.
This is good work. Good work. I mean, yeah, they're nowhere. We are not on the same scale as them.
Kind of surprising.
Yeah, I don't know. It was the last thing I was expecting. But, I mean, you know, I'm not going to lose sleep over it, and esports will move on. I don't know what you want me to say. That will it, though. That will be it for episode 80 of The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR. I appreciate you listening. Whether it was all the way through or bounced back and forth, I love you all the same. Follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. Hit us up on our website, tcr.gg. Hopefully all other podcast outlets are working now. I don't know why. It's technology. It just decides to break on its own, and I have to figure out how to fix it. So we're working on that. But until next week for episode 81, for Anuj, for Brett, I'm Tim. Follow us on Twitter again at Center Ring, and we'll see you later.